Welcome to Fit Soul Book, Chapter 15. Wow, we're already in Chapter 15. This is my weekly recording for you of a chapter from my book, Fit Soul, Tools, Tactics, and Habits for Optimizing Spiritual Fitness, a book which you can also grab for free. There's also a physical version available along with the digital version at fitsoulbook.com. That's fitsoulbook.com, and related to that, a good companion journal for that would be my Spiritual Disciplines book at spiritualdisciplinesjournal.com, and that's a relatively new release. So, here we go. Chapter 15, Bones of Steel. My wife is a skinny Montana rancher girl who is tough and hard, but also has what I would consider to be thin bird bones, along with a slight lean build that, if not kept strong via loading along the long axis of her bones, high mineral intake, omega-3 fatty acids, fat-soluble vitamins, DHEA, and progesterone optimization, and plenty of the other tactics I tackle in a pretty thorough osteoporosis podcast episode that I'll link to on the resources page for this chapter at fitsoulbook.com/chapter15, that's fitsoulbook.com/chapter15, could very well increase her risk for developing a high amount of frailty and fragility as she ages, resulting in the possibility of her doing something like, say, fracturing a hip if she steps off a curb the wrong way when she's 60. Now, I, of course, care for and love my wife, so I'm careful to, in a non-nagging sort of way, ensure that she tends to her bones so that any genetic risk for osteoporosis or osteopenia is nipped in the bud and doesn't manifest. But no matter how many kettlebell squats she does, how much calcium or vitamin K she might consume, and how much caffeine and alcohol she avoids in her quest for so-called bones of steel, she's also, based on the studying up that we've done on folks like Bruce Lipton, author of Biology of Belief, or David Hawkins, author of Healing and Recovery, and above all, the Bible, careful to focus on releasing feelings of anger, hate, selfishness, or bitterness in her life, all of which are associated with, you guessed it, bone issues. For example, in traditional Chinese medicine, the emotion of anger is not only associated with bone cancer, but the disturbance of several other emotions, especially melancholy, anxiety, and anger, and is considered to significantly contribute to the pathogenesis of chronic disease. Now, you're going to learn plenty more about that shortly, but we're going to begin elsewhere. It all began in Northern Galilee. Now, I first realized the power of emotions and stress to affect disease risk when I traveled to Israel for a tour of that country's unique collection of health spas, fitness centers, healing retreats, and wellness facilities. While there, in Northern Galilee particularly, I visited the home of a former professional basketball player named Doron Sheffer, who I interviewed in a podcast called Why You Get Cancer and What to Do About It, which I'll link to on the resources page for this particular chapter. Now, Doron had been an amazing athlete. He was an achiever, a hard charger, a so-called professional person. As a guard for the dominant college basketball team UConn, he fed the ball to star teammates like Ray Allen and played for legendary coach Jim Calhoun. Sheffer averaged 5 assists and 13 points per game. He hit 40% of his three-point attempts and led the UConn Huskies to a brilliant 89-13 record, along with NCAA tournament appearances in each of his 3 seasons. He then became the first Israeli ever drafted by the NBA when the LA Clippers selected him in the second round in 1996, but he instead signed this lucrative contract with the Israeli professional basketball team in Tel Aviv, which he then led to 4 consecutive national championships. But then, Doron got testicular cancer. When I sat down with him in his backyard garden looking over the beautiful hills of Galilee, eating a meal of organic figs, goji berries, and sweet local almonds, he described to me how the tremendous pressure, tension, difficulties, frustrations, pent-up emotions, and stress from the life of a hard-charging professional athlete eventually built up inside him and culminated in disease. Indeed, the scientists have actually discovered that emotional stress similar to what Doron experienced can be a trigger for the growth of tumors. As a matter of fact, any sort of trauma, emotional, or physical stress can act as a literal pathway between cancerous mutations, bringing them together in a potentially fatal combination. For example, at Yale University, scientists have discovered that everyday emotional stress is a trigger for the growth of tumors. The findings show that conditions for developing cancer can be significantly affected by your emotional environment. environment, including everyday work and family stress. In other words, your risk of developing cancer can be positively or negatively affected by your emotional environment, including everyday work, physical, emotional, and relationship stress. The traditional Chinese medical view of cancer etiology has long held that emotions are a major contributing factor for cancer. Author Sun Binyan writes in his book, Cancer Treatment and Prevention, according to our understanding of the tumor patient, most have suppression of the emotions. They tend to hold in their anger. Although some patients have good results after treatment, emotional stimulation can cause them to decline again, and then the previous treatment would have been in vain. Some people have a severe phobia about cancer. Before they know the real disease, they have a lot of suspicion. Once they know they have cancer, their whole spirit breaks down. This kind of spiritual state is very bad for treatment. In the book Prevention and Treatment of Carcinoma in Traditional Chinese Medicine, Jia Kun gives 10 recommendations for cancer prevention. In addition to a good environment and personal hygiene, proper amounts of physical activity and rest, good eating habits and healthy food, and avoiding smoking, he states that emotional changes such as worry, fear, hesitation, anger, irritation, and nervousness should be presented. Mental exhaustion is harmful, and life should be enriched with entertainment. Chinese medicine author Shi Lanling and Shi Peikan also mention the etiology of various cancers in their book, Experience in Treating Carcinomas with Traditional Chinese Medicine. They say, the etiologic factors of the disease involve chiefly the disturbance of the seven emotions, especially melancholy, anxiety, and anger, which are liable to impair the spleen and the liver. Impaired by melancholy and anxiety, qi will be stagnated, and the spleen will lose the function of transformation and transportation, leading to a disturbance of water metabolism and the subsequent accumulation of phlegm dampness, while, impaired by anger, the liver qi will be stagnated. The stagnated liver qi, as qi is the commander of blood, may give rise to blood stasis if not relieved in time. Thus, emotional disturbance in coordination between the ascending-descending movement of qi of the zhangfu organs, sluggish flow of qi in blood, and the ensuing obstruction of dampness, phlegm, and blood stasis are the fundamental pathogenesis of the disease. In their section on treatment of breast cancer, the authors refer to a discussion in a Ming Dynasty text by the surgeon Chen Qinggong that indicates that breast cancer results from anxiety, emotional depression, and overthinking, which impairs the liver, spleen, and heart, and causes the obstruction of the channels. This text is also mentioned in the book The Treatment of Cancer by Integrated Chinese Western Medicine, which is translated as follows. Breast cancer is due to worry and melancholy. Lots of ideas hanging around make one feel dissatisfied. Perverse flow of liver qi to the spleen leads to obstruction of the channels and collaterals and congelations due to excessive accumulation. In addition, the book Cancer Treatment with Fu Zheng Pei Bing Principle presents a section on the etiology of cancer and describes the following with regards to emotional disturbances. Traditional Chinese medicine, or TCM, embodies changes of spirit and sentiment as the seven emotions, pleasure, anger, grief, fear, yearning, sorrow, surprise, all of which are emotional, physiological reactions of an organism towards external changes in its environment. Emotional disturbance refers to reactions, either excessive or insufficient, which will ultimately lead to disturbances in the flowing of qi and blood and the visceral functions with subsequent illness. TCM claims rage harms the liver, excessive stimulation harms the heart, grief harms the spleen, sorrow harms the lungs, and fear harms the kidneys. Though not necessarily precise, this belief definitely points out that emotional injury will affect the physiological functions of the qi, blood, viscera, and channels, and lower the body resistance, resulting in disease. The human body is susceptible to cancer when under emotional stress or disturbance. One major study published in China involving a significant population of approximately 750,000 individuals in Beijing attempted to determine if psychosocial factors contributed to the incidence of primary lung cancer. They reported three factors positively associated with lung cancer. 1. A burst of emotion that cannot be controlled. 2. Poor working circumstances, including poor relationships with coworkers. And 3. A depressive feeling for a long time. Western research in a field termed affective immunology has gone on to support the idea that depression can impair immune system functions. For example, it's been shown that tumor-relevant lymphocyte subpopulations, also known as natural killer cells or NK cells, which can attack cancer cells, have receptors for various neuropeptide proteins, including those released during stress. This means that NK cell activity can be influenced by emotions. The level of NK cell activity has been shown in research to be a good predictor of breast cancer outcome, and a loss of NK activity activity in cancer patients has been shown to be correlated with psychosocial measures such as the level of patient adjustment, avoiding showing distress at the cancer diagnosis or treatment, such as internalizing the stress, lack of social support, and symptoms of fatigue or depression. By the way, laughing and joy have both been shown to increase NK cell activity. If you read a book like The Healing Code, or you look into the vast amount of research on the link between emotional stress and chronic disease, much of which I'll include on the resources page for this chapter, you'll see hundreds of examples of how sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight portion of the nervous system, can actually encourage metastasis when chronically elevated. During acute stress, that sympathetic nervous system becomes active. But as soon as the stressful event has passed, the body returns back to homeostasis within about an hour. But under chronic stress, the SNS is turned on virtually all the time. And in this chronically stressed state, adrenaline and noradrenaline can alter genetic expression via the same protein folding mechanisms you've already discovered in this chapter. This genetic alteration can lead to a number of pro-cancer processes, including activation of inflammatory responses, inhibition of immune responses, and programmed cancer cell death, reduction in the cytotoxic function of NK cells, inhibition of DNA repair, stimulation of cancer cell angiogenesis, and activation of something called epithelial mesenchymal transition, which is one of the ways new cancer stem cells are created. One researcher named Dr. Harold Burr has used mice to determine if the energy field of the human body can play a role in cancer. He measured the energy fields of the mice and noted which mice later developed cancer. After taking more than 10,000 measurements, he found that the electromagnetic signature of cancer appeared in the mouse's energy field before any detectable cellular malignancy was even evident. Burr also looked at a group of healthy women who did not have a diagnosis of uterine cancer. Interestingly, the women who had an electromagnetic signature for uterine cancer, even though they were apparently healthy, were the ones who went on to develop cancer later. In other words, cancer was showing up in the field of energy before it showed up in the physical cells. Burr's body of work demonstrated the wisdom of an ancient saying in traditional Chinese medicine: the mind controls the qi and the blood follows the qi. The ancient sages were referring to life energy, and by blood, they meant the matter of the body. Energy influences matter. Perhaps this is why research has shown tumors shrinking to less than half their original size within just a few hours of an emotional therapy session that elicited positive healing emotions. Why studies have shown the DNA in cancer cells and petri dishes in labs disintegrate when positive emotions were directed to those cells by Chinese traditional medical practitioners. And why mindfulness meditation for just 3 months has been shown to induce an anti-aging effect by directly growing your telomeres. Now here's the deal. I'm personally a hard-charging guy focused on personal and professional excellence in everything I do. But I truly believe that unless you're able to relax, breathe, de-stress, and simply stop and smell the roses, you're going to be the kind of person who eventually develops a chronic stress-related disease that forces your fast-forward life into slow motion. So you have to put the brakes on before your body puts the brakes on and forces you to stop, perhaps with the flu, perhaps with back pain, perhaps with a viral infection, or perhaps with cancer. Does that make sense? The ultimate question is, how can you do this? How can you slow down before your body forces you to slow down? How can you somehow dig yourself out of a hole of a constant barrage of emails, text messages, phone calls, over-exercising, eating to train, training to eat, going to bed late, 24/7 self-quantified biohacking, trying to have everything, FOMO, getting up early, and still somehow managing to squeeze in some semblance of quality in your friend and family relationships? Well, that's exactly what Doron figured out. And this man's new approach to life, his answers, and his new aura of peace and calm spoke heavily to me when I interviewed him. You can listen to that interview that I'll include a link to at fitsoulbook.com/chapter15. He defied conventional medicine and naturally healed his body of cancer, and his approach to life is now refreshing, relaxed, and incredibly peaceful. When I visited him at his peaceful home and private health resort in a region of Israel in Galilee called Amarim in the mountains of northern Israel, I was surrounded by a laid-back, de-stressed community of aromatherapists, massage therapists, herb gardens, spas, a health food shop, an organic olive oil shop, art galleries, restaurants, and wellness-oriented beds and breakfasts. These mountains are where Doron slipped away from chronic stress, reinvigorated his body, and underwent his own spiritual cleanse to win his battle against testicular cancer. In short, he healed himself by radically changing his environment and emotions. The biology of your beliefs. Now, I could stop here, but I know that many of you dig the hardcore science, so to speak, or at least may like to delve into some of the chemical, genetic, and physical factors underlying this link between emotions and physical health. So put on your thinking caps, because we're about to delve into a few of the concepts that stem cell biologist and author Bruce Lipton, PhD, shares in his highly relevant book, The Biology of Belief. In the book, and often during speeches, Bruce shares a quote from Albert Einstein. It goes like this: "The field is the sole governing agency of the particle." Lipton claims that if we can prove that our thoughts can create that field, and if the field is what actually controls and governs the particle, physical matter, our bodies, and the world around us, then what Einstein was actually saying was that our thoughts and intentions can directly create the world that we live in. So, in 1982, when I was 1 year old, Dr. Lipton began examining the principles of quantum physics and how they might be integrated into an understanding of the cell's information processing systems. He proceeded to produce breakthrough studies on the cell membrane, which revealed that this outer layer of the cell was an organic homologue of a computer chip, the cell's equivalent of a brain. His research at Stanford University School of Medicine went on to reveal that the environment operating through the electrochemical gradient across the cell membrane can control the behavior and physiology of the cell, and even turn genes on and off. In a nutshell, Lipton teaches that if you have a belief, then the function of the mind is to manifest that belief so that it becomes a reality. For example, if you have a belief that you're going to get a cold because you're around a friend with the sniffles, then the function of the mind is to convert that belief, along with all the anxiety and worry about getting sick and missing a work day or a trip to the beach, into physical manifestation. And voila, the next day you wake up with the sniffles. If you have a strong emotion, positive or negative, around a certain belief, it may cause that particular belief to become your physical reality. According to Lipton, the science of epigenetics is not the science of being defined by your genes or environment, but is instead the science of understanding how your interpretation of your life events and environment affects the cells of your physical body. Seem like a stretch? Well, maybe not so much a stretch as you would think. See, there's a new scientific awareness of Dr. Lipton's work, an awareness very much related to the genome project, genetic engineering, and the infatuation with DNA that seems to be currently capturing media and health world's attention. To understand this awareness, we must begin with an understanding of how our entire biological lives are driven and managed by proteins, the molecular building blocks of our bodies. There's over 150,000 different proteins that make up your body. Each protein is a long, linear molecule of amino acids linked end to end, and each molecule is like a tiny spine in which the amino acid molecules are miniature vertebrae. There are 20 different amino acids, and each one has a unique shape. The final shape of each protein spine is determined by the specific sequence of each of these uniquely shaped amino acid links. Ultimately, that means that every cell in your body is built from an assembly of thousands of different shaped protein molecules. The novelty of these proteins is that they can change their shape. As a matter of fact, the movement of the protein's tiny spine is analogous to the movement of a human spine. In your own spine, each of the jointed segments can rotate and flex at the point at which they are coupled. On the human spine, it is skeletal muscles that cause this movement. But on the protein spine, movement and shape configuration changes are the result of a repulsive or attractive force generated by electromagnetic fields. As a protein's electrical charge or field is altered, that protein adjusts the shape of its spine to accommodate these forces. When it changes shape from one configuration to another, the protein molecule moves, along with the movement of all the other protein molecules surrounding it, cooperating in functional assemblies called pathways. Respiratory pathways, digestive pathways, and muscle contraction pathways are all examples of these assemblies of proteins whose coordinated movements produce specific biological functions. Now, studies have now shown that this change in the shape of proteins can actually change the expression of our genetics, and vice versa. Since proteins are altered by electromagnetic fields, including fields generated by thoughts, feelings, and emotions, then this means that genes can be turned on and off by those same fields. That's right, you can control gene activity by focusing on your beliefs. These beliefs, true or false, positive or negative, creative or destructive, exist not only in your mind, but instead influence the very cells of your body. This also means that DNA does not by itself control your biology, and that information can be transmitted throughout your body to other people's bodies and even to your descendants in ways other than through the base sequence of DNA. This means that thoughts, emotions, and energy can activate or inhibit a cell's function-producing proteins, that harnessing the power of your mind can be just as effective or more effective than pharmaceuticals, supplements, and biohacks, and that the perception of your environment is significantly responsible for your health and biological function. What we think, feel, and say, who we are around, and everything in our environment has a significant influence on who we are and how we function, even down to the details of how our genes are expressed. So is it true that a sunny outlook means fewer colds and less heart disease? Hope can somehow protect against hypertension, diabetes, and respiratory tract infections, and happier people live longer? Turns out that research on the biology of emotion and what it may teach us about helping people to live longer has been studied at institutions like Harvard. Laura Kubzansky of the Harvard School of Public Health is at the forefront of such research. In one 2007 study that followed more than 6,000 men and women for 20 years, she found that emotional vitality, a sense of enthusiasm, hopefulness, engagement in life, and ability to face life stresses with emotional balance, significantly reduces the risk of coronary heart disease, even when accounting for healthy behaviors such as not smoking and regular exercise. A vast amount of additional scientific literature details how negative emotions harm the body, and how sustained stress or fear can alter biology in a way that, over time, adds up to wear and tear and eventually illnesses including heart disease, stroke, and diabetes. For example, chronic anger and anxiety have been proven to disrupt cardiac function by changing the heart's electrical stability, hastening atherosclerosis, and increasing systemic inflammation. Even the sustained activation of the body's stress response system resulting from early life experiences like neglect, violence, or living alone with a parent suffering severe mental illness has harmful effects on the brain and other organ systems. But additional research has shown that certain personality traits help people avoid or manage diseases such as heart attacks, strokes, diabetes, and depression, including emotional vitality, that sense of enthusiasm, hopefulness, and engagement, optimism, a perspective that good things will happen and that one's actions account for the good things that occur in life, supportive networks of family and friends, and bouncing back from stressful challenges while knowing that things will eventually look up again. Among dozens of published papers outlining these types of stress responses, Kubzansky has shown that children who are able to stay focused on a task and have a more positive outlook at age 7 report better general health and fewer illnesses as much as 30 years later. She's also found that optimism cuts the risk of heart disease in half. Wow. Where quantum biology fits in. It turns out that some of these phenomena can be explained by the field of quantum biology. I first became familiarized with the ins and outs of quantum biology when I read the fascinating book The Quantum Doctor by Dr. Amit Goswami, who also stars in the equally excellent film on quantum healing, which is a bit controversial, but it's called What the Bleep Do We Know? In the book, Dr. Goswami explains how the vibration of the atoms that make up our bodies can have profound effects on our mental and physical well-being. Newtonian mechanics merely recognize the role of chemical signals, such as hormones, growth factors, neurotransmitters, peptides, or drugs, and deny the role of the immaterial or unseen energy fields. But energy and vibrational waves, operating through widely accepted quantum mechanics principles and influenced by beliefs and emotions, are just as effective in signaling protein movement as physical chemicals. The quickest way to begin wrapping your head around this is with a thought experiment. Pause to look at yourself in a mirror, or perhaps the selfie camera on your smartphone, or just stare at your hand. What do you see? You see a human being, a single physical individual. But take this further. Under this skin, there's a collection of tissue, muscles, bones, organs, and blood. The truth is, when you see a single individual looking back at you, it's a misperception. Go deeper. What makes up those bones, the muscles, the blood? Cells. And what are the cells composed of? Molecules. And then what? Atom particles. When you go inside the atom at this level, you find protons, neutrons, electrons, and take it to the final extent, what are these particles made of? At this fundamental quantum level, the answer discovered is that there's nothing physical at all. It's all energy and vibration. Looked at from this final perspective, what you see looking back at you in the mirror is the physical expression of energy, and those energy vibrations are influenced by thought patterns, emotions, beliefs, and everything else you're listening to in this chapter. Quantum theory states that when the mind observes a set of circumstances or phenomena, it has an impact on the outcome. This is called the observer effect, which in basic terms means that if you try to observe a particle, it will act as a particle. And in the absence of observation, it tends to act more like a wave. In the same way, the impact the mind will have upon any physical or mental outcome will be determined by the state of mind of the observer. In the field of quantum biology, the mind is the primary instrument used to heal the body. The mind of the healer, yourself or another, must be in a healthy state if it is to have a healing effect on the body. So when the mind is in a state of stress, it will have a negative impact upon the body, which can create illness or disease. But when the mind is in a state of appreciation and well-being, it will have a positive effect upon the body and can result in healing. In a nutshell, the fields of quantum biology and quantum healing are based around this concept of quantum physics, that your state of mind can actually affect the vibration of molecules in your body. And this can then affect your physical and mental well-being. The map of consciousness. 2 years after meeting with Doron, I discovered the work of Dr. David Hawkins, author of the book Healing and Recovery. In his book, Dr. Hawkins describes how to identify protein shifting and cellular membrane influencing emotions that are either helpful or deleterious, including practical ways to permanently change negative emotions such as anger, shame, and fear, along with how to shift into positive emotions like peace, love, and joy. Like Lipton, Hawkins teaches that the body expresses and is subject to what is held in the mind, and therefore the greater the amount of negativity held in the mind, the greater the deleterious effects of this negative energy field on the biological well-being. In contrast, the greater the positive energy, the more positive the health outcomes. It turns out that each emotion, positive or negative, is associated with a specific vibratory frequency that can be measured. For example, at a frequency of about 540 hertz, the body can begin to heal from the inside out due to a release of endorphins within the brain. Now let's take a closer look at how emotion can create a specific vibratory frequency. If you've ever opened a physics book, you've probably seen a wave. One cycle of a wave is referred to as a frequency, and frequencies are measured in hertz, Hz, or the number of waves per second, which means one wave cycle in 1 second would be 1 hertz. A high frequency would include lots of waves per second, while a low frequency would involve just a few waves per second. The height of a wave can be measured and is referred to as voltage, not to be confused with amplitude, which is simply the measure of the maximum value of voltage. A wave can be high voltage or low voltage. In addition, the power of a wave is called amperage. Waves can have plenty of power behind them, high amp waves with high amplitude, or little power behind them, low amp waves with low amplitude. In addition, a wave's vibration can be smooth or angular, and a wave can have a regular pattern or an irregular pattern. Ultimately, the combination of speed, height, power, smoothness, and regularity of a wave are used to define the vibration of a wave. In other words, vibration is the resulting pattern of all variables of a wave I've just described. As you can imagine, there are billions of combinations of these functions. Now, here's what's important to understand. Every object on the face of the planet, from the simplest molecule to a tiny mouse to an enormous elephant to your own body, has its own unique vibrational fingerprint, a fingerprint created from this infinite combination of vibrations. Some physical objects have lower and slower vibrations, and some higher and faster vibrations. For example, the book The Molecules of Emotion by Dr. Candace Pert highlights how molds, viruses, bacteria, and parasites vibrate at around 77 kilohertz, goldfish at 1,000 kilohertz, and a human body at 1,520 kilohertz. In her book, Pert highlights how emotions have unique vibrations just like colors and physical objects do. These emotional vibrations also range from higher and faster to lower and slower. For example, when you're laughing and full of joy, your vibrations become higher and faster. When you are tired or sick, your vibrations become slower and lower. Recall the last time you fell in love or were loving someone. Did you feel energized and high as though you were walking on a cloud? Well, that's because your entire body was literally vibrating at a higher frequency. This is also why when you're negative, depressed, or stressed, you can feel sluggish, slow, and heavy. Your vibrations are lower and slower. This is all actually scientifically measurable, with much of the latest research performed and measured on power spectrum graphs by the HeartMath Institute, as well as by a form of photography called Kirlian photography. It's possible to take these pictures and measure the human body's frequencies because, as you've already learned, human beings are composed of electromagnetic energy. Using similar techniques, Dr. David Hawkins actually measured the vibrational frequency of specific emotions, and over 20 years of research, kinesiology, and muscle testing translated these frequencies into a logarithmic scale, along with 17 different levels of consciousness associated with each emotion in what he calls a map of consciousness. In his book, he describes how stress proneness and vulnerability are directly related to our current state of emotional vibration. The highest attainable level of consciousness is enlightenment, which would be 1,000. Moving from the 0 to the 1,000 mark represents a shift in emotions from the lowest emotion of fear all the way up to the highest emotion of love. So there's actually some pretty good descriptions of how Hawkins describes the different levels of consciousness. I'll give you the entire map. Shame is a level of 1 to 20. It's the lowest one, associated with humiliation, low self-esteem, and paranoia. Someone at this level often feels worthless and sometimes becomes a rigid or neurotic perfectionist or moral extremist. The life view of this state is misery. Guilt is 30, accompanied by feelings of blame and remorse, often accompanied by manipulative tendencies and a tendency to be condemning of self and others. Apathy is 50, It's a state of helplessness and despair, along with neediness and dependency on others. Because this level of energy feels heavy and burdensome, many people avoid those vibrating at the level of apathy. And some societies even tuck away or hide the poor and homeless, who often live at this level. This level is also associated with hopelessness and abdication, or giving up one's power to others. Grief is 75. Although they're not as low in boundless energy as someone who is apathetic, someone at the level of grief feels generally depressed about life and often has a tragic view of the world, accompanied by feelings of regret and sadness. Fear is 100. Someone operating at this level has anxiety, paranoia, fear of rejection, fear of failure, fear of uncertainty, fear of challenges, fear of aging, fear of death, fear of loss, fear of strangers, and overall sense that the world is a scary and frightening place. Desire is 125. At this grass is always greener on the other side level, you have constant cravings for more money, a better life, better sex, and hedonistic consumption of goods and pursuit of pleasures. This can lead to a never-ending loop of consumption and dissatisfaction. On a positive note, this and future stages are at least those in which someone is taking actions and attempting to move forward and make progress in life. Anger is 150. This level is associated with hate, resentment, frustration, toxicity, and revenge. Think of an internet troll, often manifesting in irritable behavior, arguments, and aggression. Pride is 175. Narcissism, ego inflation, and scorn or judgment of others dominate at this level, along with a demanding personality and overall arrogance. Courage is 200. At this level, one becomes constructive rather than destructive, with a view of the world as exciting and full of possibility and positive growth if one recognizes they can choose to be happy no matter their circumstances. Neutrality is 250. At this level, one becomes non-judgmental, objective, and able to begin to see things as they truly are, without excessive attachment to possessions and results, and an ability to be able to adapt to curveballs that life may throw. Occasionally, excessive detachment and carelessness can be issues at this level. Then there's willingness at 310. A high amount of optimism occurs here, and because life is full of hope and meaning, you become full of positive action and open to do anything and everything it takes to succeed. Acceptance is 350. Forgiveness becomes the dominant emotion here, and one begins to become more harmonious with themselves and the rest of the world, aware of limiting beliefs and thought patterns. Reason is 400. Understanding, rationality, logic, and patient decision-making dominate here, although they are often accompanied by over-intellectualization and an excessive obsession over data. Love is 500, characterized by pure happiness and goodwill towards others, with a willingness to sacrifice and love fellow humans with no judgment. Joy is at 540. The dominant emotions at this level are compassion, happiness, patience, serenity, and a positive attitude. One has not only fully realized they can choose to be happy no matter their circumstances, but they actually are happy. Then there's peace at 600. Peace, which I also describe as the absolute and ruthless elimination of haste, hurry, and negative stress in one's life, is a state in which the dominant emotion is bliss and pure satisfaction. Enlightenment is 700 to 1,000. This ultimate pinnacle of emotion is often associated with fully enlightened consciousness and a conscientious figure in history like Krishna, Buddha, or Jesus. Like Lipton, Hawkins teaches that illness tends to result from suppressed and repressed negative emotions, especially those emotions associated with the lower levels of consciousness you've just heard about, followed by a thought that gives the emotion a specific form. So a thought has energy and form, and the mind has these thoughts and feelings that can control the body. Therefore, to heal the body from the inside out, thoughts and feelings need to be changed, because what is held in the mind tends to express itself throughout the body, which is like a puppet controlled by the mind. Thoughts are caused by suppressed and repressed feelings, but when a feeling is let go, thousands or even millions of thoughts that were activated by that feeling disappear. You surrender a feeling by allowing it to be there without condemning, judging, or resisting it. Instead, you just look at it, observe it, and allow it to be felt without trying to modify it. Hawkins emphasizes that it is important to understand that feelings are not the real self. Whereas feelings are programs that come and go, the real inner self always stays the same. Therefore, it's necessary to stop identifying transient feelings as yourself. No matter what is going on in life, keeping the steadfast intention to surrender negative feelings as they arise is key. Make a decision that freedom is more desirable than having a negative feeling, and choose to surrender negative feelings rather than express them, which is also surrendering resistance to and skepticism about your positive feelings. In addition, especially when focusing on fixing an illness or injury or keeping one from happening in the first place, you can associate with people who are using the same or similar motivation and who have the intention to express these positive feelings and to heal. Be aware that your inner state is known and transmitted to others. The people around you will intuit based on your electromagnetic signals from your heart and your brain, along with your overall vibrational frequency, what you're feeling and thinking, even if you don't vocally verbalize it. How your environment and emotions impact your genes and your health. The field of research into microRNA reveals that our guts and genes can also have an impact on our personality, emotions, and character. These microRNA, which are small RNA molecules found in plants, animals, and even some viruses, are tiny trafficking proteins that modify the behavior of our genes. A single human gene can make over 200 different proteins, depending on its microRNA and environment. Your capacity to regenerate organs and to build a new body every day is highly dependent on these microRNA. Now, if you do the math, with your approximately 20,000 genes, you can create somewhere around 4 million different bodies today. If you've built a positive emotional and physical environment and ecosystem around you that's allowing you to build that body, this means that you have almost incalculable capacity to change who and how you feel today by changing the environment around you. But if you have a chronic ailment, whether it's something as minor as postnasal drainage and chronic congestion or diarrhea, constipation, bloating, obesity, or even depressive thought patterns or negative people around you, then your microRNA becomes capable of creating a body that is comprised of broken components. These microRNA, derived from the non-coding or non-gene regions of your DNA, can leave the cell and even leave your body. For example, right now, if a physician was to swab your mouth, they could extract microRNA clusters that are in your saliva, and if they go and analyze these microRNA, they can tell exactly what genes you're starting to turn on and off. These microRNA can be analyzed in urine, breath, and sweat. This means you have tiny packets of data going out into the environment around you. If you sit in a lecture hall over the course of an hour, the professor could slightly change everybody's genome in the room by exhaling their microRNA into the room. And the trees, the soil, and the fungi in the environment you live in are performing these same actions with their own microRNA. In addition, the bacteria in your gut are making at least 35% of the microRNA that winds up in your bloodstream and is then sweated out, breathed out, urinated out, or salivated out into the body of another person when you kiss them. This means that not only are your genes heavily influenced by other people and the environment you're living in, but 35% of what you're giving out to the world is technically non-human and made by the bacteria inside you. Many studies have also suggested that how we think and feel is also controlled by these microRNA. And I'll link to many of those studies at fitsoulbook.com/chapter 15. Another example of the interplay between biology and consciousness can be seen in the realm of cannabinoids, which are derivatives that are compounds occurring naturally in the plant cannabis sativa. For example, the first and most widely investigated of all of these is 9-tetrahydrocannabinol, 9-THC, which is the main psychotropic constituent of cannabis and the one that undergoes significant binding to cannabinoid receptors in your body, like CB1 and CB2 receptors. Two very similar endogenous cannabinoids are anandamide and something called 2-AG. Over the years, a significant number of articles have been published in the field of endogenous cannabinoids and have shown that the endocannabinoid system controls multiple functions involving consciousness, including feeding, pain, learning, memory, pain perception, emotions, sleep-wake cycles, and dreaming. So sometimes working on your spiritual health, especially in matters of emotion or consciousness, involves simultaneously working on your biological health and also considering the biological and emotional health of those you surround yourself with. In summary, there's a big emotional and physical payoff to surrounding yourself with positive people, being positive yourself, and being cognizant of your own internal microbiome and the amount of time you spend in nature surrounded by a natural, flourishing microbiome. In summary, to begin to heal your body with your mind, you have to understand you're only subject to what you hold in your mind. You're only subject to a negative thought or belief if you consciously or unconsciously say it applies to you. Just imagine the vast array of possibilities that exist once you begin to implement these principles. If you think you're tired, you can become tired. If you think you're sick, you can become sick. If you think you're bold and courageous, you can become bold and courageous. If you think you're happy, you can become a more joyful person to be around. You get the idea. What the Bible says about bone health and overall soundness of body. Now, despite me respecting and finding a great deal of insight and wisdom from the work of those I've cited thus far, including Bruce Lipton, David Hawkins, and Amit Goswami, my source of absolute truth is always the Bible. And with increasing frequency, I turn to the scriptures over and over again to see whether the work of philosophers and physicians like those I've described is actually backed up by the Word of God. And I'm always pleasantly surprised by what I find. Consider the words of Isaiah 58:10-11, a passage I recently stumbled upon that draws a fascinating corollary between charity, empathy, and service for the needy, and bone density. Now, admittedly, in Hebrew literature, bone health is also indicative of overall soundness of flesh and body and overall mortality. And in Chinese medicine, presence or absence of cancers. Here's what that passage in Isaiah says. If you pour yourself out for the hungry and satisfy the desire of the afflicted, then shall your light rise in the darkness and your gloom be as the noonday. And the Lord will guide you continually and satisfy your desire in scorched places and make your bones strong. And you shall be like a watered garden, like a spring of water, whose waters do not fail. The relationship between state of mind, state of the emotions, and bones in particular is also emphasized in other verses in the Bible, like Psalms 32, 3 through 5. When I kept silent, my bones wasted away through my groaning all day long. For day and night your hand was heavy on me. My strength was sapped as in the heat of summer. Then I acknowledged my sin to you and did not cover up my iniquity. I said, I will confess my transgressions to the Lord, and you forgave the guilt of my sin. Proverbs 14, 30. A peaceful heart is life to the body, but envy rots the bones. Proverbs 15:30, light in a messenger's eyes brings joy to the heart, and good news gives health to the bones. Proverbs 12:4, a wife of noble character is her husband's crown, but she who causes shame is like decay in his bones. Proverbs 17:22, a merry heart does good like a medicine, but a broken spirit dries the bones. Proverbs 3:7-8, do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and turn away from evil. This will bring healing to your body and refreshment to your bones. What repeated themes do you hear here? Well, I personally see the following factors all being cited as detrimental to the overall soundness of flesh and bones. Hidden sin, guilt, or bitterness stowed away in your heart. Excessive stress and the absence of peace. Relationships that are associated with emotions of shame and strife. A lack of joy and happiness. An absence of humility paired with an oversized ego. So one could therefore say that when it boils down to what the Bible tells us about our health, particularly our bones, that love, humility, and transparency in relationships, a focus on freedom from suppressed anger or bitterness, low amounts of chronic stress accompanied by a trust in God, and seeking sources of joy and happiness like children, hobbies, art, music, funny movies, and most importantly, supreme satisfaction in God and His creation, all seem to have a profound impact on health, backing up once again the importance of a sound spirit, a sound body, and a sound mind. Summary. So when it comes to cancer, bone density, mortality, and overall soundness of body and mind, you can see that Doron became peaceful by shifting himself from the oh-so-typical Western competitive go-go-go lifestyle to an environment of peace and stillness. Chinese traditional medicine has known for thousands of years that worry, fear, hesitation, anger, irritation, nervousness, and the like should all be prevented to maximize health. Bruce Lipton, Hawkins, Goswami, and a host of additional authors, researchers, and physicians have demonstrated the intimate link between our state of mind, emotions, and biology. And finally, the Bible backs all this up, once again clearly demonstrating that you can't CrossFit, triathlonize, or vegan, carnivore, and keto diet your way into ultimate health. Nor can you simply take calcium pills for bone density, or chemo, fasting, and vitamin C IVs for cancer. Well, that's all I have for you in today's chapter. But if you want more, then read chapters 15, 19, 20, and 21 of my book, Boundless, in which I teach you how to use potent tactics like purpose, gratitude, prayer, yoga, breathwork, visualization, mindfulness, meditation, tapping, acupuncture, sound healing, and many other modalities to improve immunity, lifespan, and health. That book is at boundlessbook.com. In the meantime, I also encourage you to consider how you care for your own emotional and spiritual health and pay attention to what you experienced as a health and biological result from those practices. The two factors are more intertwined than most people suspect. Finally, how do you know if all of those spiritual fitness and emotional health practices are actually working on your physical body? Well, in the next chapter, I'll address that very question about how to listen to your body. In the meantime, for resources, references, links, and additional reading and listening material for this chapter, you can visit fitsoulbook.com/chapter15.